When you read the Bible, heaven starts being described, it sounds like Eden. It sounds like a river flowing out of it. It sounds like community. It sounds like people. It sounds like art. It sounds like culture. It sounds like civilization. I mean, it just sounds like that to me.
Pastor, author, and Bible teacher Alan Wright. Welcome to Sharing the Light, a program of healing and hope, sharing the good news of what God has done for us in Jesus Christ. I'm Daniel Britt. We're in the middle of Alan's series on heaven, taken from the pulpit at Renolda Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
We are focusing a lot on heaven, but don't be mistaken, we're talking about the earth too. And Alan, you're saying the earth is good.
The earth is good. In the beginning, when God made everything, he said, that is good, that is good, that is good, that is good, that is very good. And there is a hopeless view that is unbiblical that says what God's going to do is just scrap it all, and he's going to just scrap you and me, and he's just going to start all over again. That's not really the picture. The promise of Revelation is that, behold, I make a new heaven and a new earth. And while our minds can't conceive what this will be like, there is going to be a joining of heaven and earth in some cosmic way, such that God is revealing his true nature is to restore what has been broken, damaged, and lost. He's not a God who scraps something. He's a God who restores in his providence, just like he's done in our lives, where instead of giving up on us, he came in the person of Jesus Christ and redeemed us and transformed us spiritually. Well, thus he's going to do for all of heaven and earth. And I believe that he's going to remake this earth, and it's going to be glorious.
Well, if you want to know more, listen up next on Sharing the Light. And stay tuned at the end of today's broadcast for information on receiving Alan's full teaching on the new heaven and new earth. Here once again is Alan Wright.
I love the story about the man who was desperate to take all his wealth with him to heaven, and he just kept asking the Lord, please, can I bring with him? And finally, the Lord relented and said, all right, I'm going to just this one time, I'm going to make an exception. I'm going to let you bring your stuff with you if you want. And so the man was so excited, he sold all of his money and houses and stocks, and he put it into gold bricks and loaded them up, and sure enough came to the pearly gates, and there he had his sack on his back. And St. Peter said, why you got a sack? He said, nobody ever brings stuff in here. And the man said, yeah. He said, but I got special permission from God. He said, I could bring the stuff with me. And Peter said, wow, the Lord's never done that before. He said, can I take a peek and see what's in there? And so he looked in, Peter looked in the bag to see all these gold bricks. And Peter stepped back and it was a look of shock on his face. He said, you brought pavement? It's to say that if you can envision what is most valuable here, or most glorious here, it might be just the pavement in the new heaven and new earth. Now, I don't know if when Revelation speaks of the street of gold, if this is to be taken as literal gold. Maybe. Maybe not. But what the image is given is that if you understand in this world that gold is valuable and there are limited commodities, so we would never use gold for streets. It would be too opulent and wasteful. That in heaven, that where there is no limit of that which is beautiful and valuable, we could pave the streets with gold. And so there's a sense, I guess what I'm saying is that the idea of streets of gold in heaven is, whether that is literal or figurative, in the end, it doesn't matter. It accomplishes the same purpose to us from Revelation, and that is that it is not something that is utterly alien to you. It is not completely unimaginable. In other words, there can be something that is new, but it is new in the sense that it is so much better. See, I grew up as the third of three boys, and so I mainly lived off hand-me-downs my whole life. And so I didn't get many new things. And so I was like something. Every fall, my grandmother would take us out and do go back to school shopping and get us some new shoes and some new clothes. And it was about the only time I remember really getting much of anything new. And by the time you're third and there for a while, mom's a single mom raising three boys and stuff, and you just don't. You know, there's not a lot left. And so I just love to go get, something new. And I like the smell of something new. But mainly when I say something new, to me, new, therefore, it just means not all used up. I mean, it's like I don't remember ever last time I bought a truly new car that hadn't been, driven before. But, when you have a really old car, like my car I had some years ago that was one of the few those Toyota Avalons that had a sludge problem, and it was bad sludge, and so it would blow smoke, heavy thick smoke, and when you'd start the car up, and so it was really embarrassing to have this car start with a heavy thick smoke. And so when I finally got rid of that car. And I got another car. It's a 1999 model, but it doesn't blow smoke. So, that's a new car, to me. In other words, sometimes what new means is it doesn't have the old problem. It doesn't mean, if you say, I'm going to get a new car, you don't mean I'm going to go out and get something that's never existed before. Now, if I were to get a new car, I mean, it'd be cool if it were kind of a James Bond, Batman-like car and could fly and be submerged like a submarine. I mean, that'd be cool. But when we talk about getting a new car, what you're talking about is something that I can't identify with, but it is new in the sense that it is, all of the problems of the old are gone, plus it has features that are way better than what the old had. I remember the first car we ever got that had power windows and stuff like that. It was still a car, but we were like, whoa, this is amazing. The windows just go up and down with a button. And it was new. But I knew what a car is. And the misconception we have of heaven is that it is so different that it will feel alien to us. But the picture of Scripture is that it's not like that. Instead, there'll be a new heaven and a new earth that are in continuity with the old. Most of the words for salvation in the Bible have the sense of restoring something. The idea of sozo in the New Testament, this word can mean to make whole or to heal. It's used interchangeably. Redeem, restore, reconcile, return, renew. You see how almost all the words that have to do with the saving work of God in the English language end up having that prefix re, meaning again. It is making it new, but by doing so in a restorative way. Almost all of Jesus's miracles were restoring something or making more of a good thing. Other than him cursing the fig tree, pretty much every miracle is either restoring someone's health, restoring someone's freedom, restoring someone to what they should be, or making more of something, fishes and loaves, wine, something that already existed in the earth. In other words, what you learn about God is that God is committed to what he's made, that it's good. And what we're drawn to in drawing to that which is new is not something that is completely alien to us, not to an ethereal, vague heaven that we'll never recognize. We're homesick for a better earth. We're homesick for the Eden that we lost. That was part of the genius of the Wizard of Oz, was there's no place like home. There's no place like home. Emerald City isn't what we're longing for. We're longing for home is what it should be. The joy of heaven is not going to be simply the joy of the unfamiliar, radically different, It's going to be the incredible joy of that which is familiar because it is as it should be. I've told you before, as I was approaching my 40th birthday, and I'm just usually not into, you know, caring about what goes on my birthday, but I don't know. I thought it was, my wife loves to celebrate so much, and it was just, my 40th was coming, and it was looking like it was going to be a fizzle. You know, I mean, it was just, you know, which, I don't know. I was just at a season in my life. It was just, I just felt a little like, man, you know, I don't know. I mean, nobody notices. And, you know, and my own wife doesn't really hardly notice. But we went to, this is part of the amazing part of the story. It was my birthday, and I said, let's go eat at Ryan's restaurant. We, kind of a place we go for our celebrations and love it. And I brought it up. I brought it up that day. I said, well, you know, she said, well, where, you know, tonight's your birthday dinner. And I said, yeah. She said, where do you want to go? I said, I'd like to go to Ryan's. And so we go to Ryan's. I mean, it had been my idea. And walked in and table back in the back room. And when I stepped into the back room, and all of a sudden, everybody shouted, surprise. And there were people in there that had flown in from Florida and other places around that had come. There were family and some old friends, people I hadn't seen in a long time that had been important in my life. And all they were there, we had lump crab meat and filet mignon and enjoyed the evening at Ryan's. And then later she presented me a book that she'd gotten, she'd been working on for months and months. All these people, mentors and others, had sent me notes and things that they, you know, had and I just was thinking about it later, and I just thought, you know, that's a pretty good picture of heaven. Is you know, just when you get a little tired and maybe you're wondering whether it was all noticed or whether there's really much love that's there, and you're going to wake up. You're going to wake up, and you know what the beautiful thing is going to be, it's going to be the familiarity of the people that you see. That there's a surprise party for you. There's a welcome party. And see, it wouldn't have been a blessing to me if that night I had stepped into the back room of Ryan's and they said, surprise. And I looked around, there were 40 strangers. That I mean, I'd appreciate them coming, but you know, I'd rather spend the evening with my wife than 40 strangers. And, you know, to talk to everybody and everything. And that wouldn't be a blessing. What I'm saying is that the earth is good. The earth, like our lives, has been corrupted by sin. And we've been told over and over that we need to avoid the world and worldly things. And it is true, the things of the world that are sinful, worldliness, we need to avoid. But if we spiritualize everything about how bad the world is, we can't wait to leave this world behind and all that, then at some point, doesn't it make you feel like a hypocrite? Because although I've been through some incredibly difficult things in my life, and you have too, and although there's a lot of suffering around the world, and although that there are times and seasons in which there are peoples that are suffering so much, and first century Christians went through this, the hope of heaven sometimes about all you have, but God has been so good to us that the fact of the matter is that this is God's world. This is my Father's world, and I love this world. Amen. Listen to what Randy Alcorn said. To say the world is not your home to a person who's fully alive and alert to the wonders of the world is like throwing a bucket of water on kindling's blaze. We should fan the flames of that blaze to help it spread, not seek to put it out. Otherwise, we malign our God-given instinct to love the earthly home God made for us, and we reduce spirituality into a denial of art, culture, science, sports, education, and all else human. When we do this, we set ourselves up for hypocrisy. For we may pretend to disdain the world while sitting in church, but when we get in the car, we turn on our favorite music and head home to barbecue with friends, watch a ball game, play golf, ride bikes, work in the garden, or curl up savoring a cup of coffee and a good book. Listen to this. We do these things not because we're sinners, but because we are people. A I'm not, I feel liberated from having to go around and say, well, I can't wait to leave this cruddy old world behind. Now, the world's got a lot of suffering. The world's got bad things in it. But what I'm really looking for is something that is this world and is like this world, but is a better world. We weren't made to say that we weren't made for this world isn't to say that we weren't made for the kind of earth that it is. It's to say that we're made for eternity and we're made for something better than this. But we were made out of this dust and we were made to live on an earth. And God's got a plan for a new earth. And what I'm saying is that we've turned heaven into something that's not as exciting or promising or hopeful as what it really is according to the Bible. And we're jipping ourselves out of the great hope. Because it heaven is not defined by just the absence of the negative things. You say, somebody say, well, tell me about heaven. They say, well, there's no crying, there's no suffering, there's no tears, there's no disease, no bad things. Well, that is true, and that's wonderful. But really, when you read the Bible, when heaven starts being described, it sounds like Eden. It sounds like a river flowing out of it. It sounds like community. It sounds like people. It sounds like art. It sounds like culture. It sounds like civilization. It sounds like golf. It sounds like Carolina basketball winning. I mean, it just sounds like that to me. When our beloved Tom Hall, our elder in our church, had a mild stroke this week, and you know, it's a very scary thing. You don't know what's going on. And while if you're ever in the midst of something like that, some of you have experienced those kinds of health scares and things that happen in your life. And, you know, while you're in the midst of it, and your left hand isn't working right, and your speech isn't working right, and it's Wednesday night, and, you know, I'd be doing what Tom's doing, just kind of like, am I going to be able to, you know, how are you going to keep the thought from going through your mind? Am I going to be able to hold a golf club anymore? You know? I mean, these are the important things we think about in moments like that. And so I just texted Tom on Saturday because Laura had said, Tom's playing golf. On Wednesday night, he couldn't move his arm right and his speech was all garbled on Wednesday night. And on Saturday morning, he's playing golf. And, you know, it just touched me. And so I just texted Tom. I said, how'd you hit him today? And he said, shot a 76. Now, that just ain't fair right there. Man, have a stroke and shoot a 76 3 days later ain't fair. But I felt like the Lord said to me, he said, Alan, that's the new heaven and new earth. If you say that what heaven is about is there are no strokes there and you get healed and you get a new body, that's true. But that's not what makes heaven heaven. What made this week heavenly for Tom Hall and for me to watch it was not just that he didn't get debilitated by this stroke and got totally healed, but that he played golf on Saturday. You got stuff to do in heaven. It's a new heaven. It's a new earth. And I spent 3 weeks now meditating on heaven, and there's a joy that's coming to me, and I'm trying to understand what it is, and I tell you what it is. It's hope. Here's why. When you gain more and more certainty of blessings that are in the future, that blessedness is yours now. My daughter Abigail, who, if you would ask her what she want in life, she'd say a horse. And we're not going to get a... Abby, if you listen, we're not getting a horse, darling. But if I told her, Abby, this Christmas, you're getting a horse. We're not, Abby. We're not. But if I told her we were, between now and Christmas, she wouldn't have a horse. But she'd feel like a person who had a horse. Because the future blessing counts as today's blessing. That's the hope of heaven. And that is the gospel.
Alan Wright. You're listening to Sharing the Light. And today's teaching, The New Heaven and New Earth.
Okay, so you've got us thinking about heaven in this series. Can we take it too far? Can we be too heavenly minded to be any earthly good? Have you ever met a person like that and you thought, well, they're too heavenly minded. They need to get back and ground their feet on solid ground here.
Yeah. I think one of the misunderstandings of heaven is that we get this hopeless mentality in life, like, well, this world is miserable, and God's had it with this world, and he's going to destroy this world and everything in it, and we just need to hang on through all these tough times until God snatches us out of here, and so therefore, I'm going to just spend all my time just, you know, focused on heaven rather than trying to change anything here in the world. Well, that's just an unbiblical perspective because, you know, as we're learning, God's going to make a new heaven and a new earth. And the whole gospel is just filled with hope. And what hope does is it makes us want to engage in life and make a difference. So it's not to say that we've got a view of the world where if we just try hard enough, we can make the world into a good place. No, that's not true. That's more the spirit of the age. But it is to say, on the other hand, that God's gospel is pure enough and powerful enough, and God's providence is great enough that we, as co-laborers with Christ, we're really making a difference here. So I do think, in one sense, you know, we as Christians, we can get such a separatist mentality, an escapist mentality, that we've become, too heavenly-minded to be much earthly good.
The teaching you heard today is part of a complete CD collection on Alan's Heaven series, and it's our special offer to you for a donation of any amount to Sharing the Light Ministries. As you've heard today, heaven is something we should be anticipating, and although we don't know everything about eternity, there are some absolutes from Scripture. You'll find encouragement and hope as you study along with Alan on CD at your own pace. Request a copy when you call, email, or write us. Also, if you've never contacted us before, please ask for today's free gift to you, the complete message from which today's program was edited. Again, free to first-time friends of Sharing the Light. Our toll-free number is 877-LIGHT-60, on the web at sharingthelight.org, or write to us at Sharing the Light, Post Office Box 5008, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, 27113. We also ask you to remember that Sharing the Light is able to continue spreading the teaching of the gospel only because of the financial support of faithful friends. Please pray and consider a tax-deductible gift to Sharing the Light Ministries. And while we certainly appreciate your prayer support and your financial giving at any level, Alan, we do have a special opportunity for folks to get involved with us and join the Circle of Light.
We exist because of partners in ministry that believe that this message of grace is urgent and important and powerful. And so this is a new ministry that includes those that want to be in ongoing partnership with us, people that give $20 or more a month or annually along that line. We want to show some special connection together and really sort of a circle of light with the sense of just ever broadening the light of the gospel. There are some special privileges for those who are in the circle of light, including special access to parts of our website that will enable you to access all of the messages of a current sermon series that I'll be preaching, as well as a classic series and some other special communications and opportunities that come along throughout the year. But most of all, the great privilege of being part of the Circle of Light is that you know that you are impacting thousands of lives every day through this radio broadcast. And we are so grateful for all of our partners, because otherwise the broadcast in all of our ministry would not be possible. The Circle of Light really is sharing the light of the gospel all across the world.
Your contributions help sustain the broadcast in your city. When you give $20 a month or more, ask about joining the Circle of Light when you call 877-LIGHT-60 or visit sharingthelight.org. Now, a look ahead at the next edition of Sharing the Light with Alan Wright.
Thoughts and assurances of heaven are not, for the Christian, a form of escape from this world, but an invitation to find joy and power in this world. The liberation from the bondage of fear to death is a gift to the Christian to be able to live powerfully, joyfully, abundantly now.
We certainly hope you'll join us next time and mention the teaching you heard to a friend. Thanks for listening by radio, podcast, or through our online resources at sharingthelight.org. This has been Sharing the Light with Alan Wright, a listener-supported production of Sharing the Light Ministries.